Yeah.
Conference record has joined the conference.
We want to explore the alternative too, and stronger.
He's going to have to go get it.
Well, went into, you know, help a woman if she's carrying out mud, and I mean, there's everything.
It's just the saddest thing. A guy
it
on
is
my
the
board,
saddest
my,
thing.
My board member said his entire house is gone.
Get started?
From which county?
Yes, we should get started. Stay on schedule. Is Robert on the line? We were waiting for Robert, but I don't know if he's.
He did have a meeting. I don't know
okay,
when he would have.
And back to you. You're on.
Steve is going to run us through the financing recommendation that was developed. It was sent out for comment. We got some comments. They've been added in. So this is, if you recall from our last meeting, we wanted to have a resolution about financing. And so today is our chance to do the last-minute tweaks on it so that next time we can vote it through without any more editing. So do you want to walk through it, Steve?
Okay, so this is was done as a result of the sort of the transition from really what is a social services program to a health insurance program. How to change the perception of that out in the communities and address the financing side of it. New York is very unique in how it finances Medicaid. So that was sort of the first bullet. The second bullet is talking why it's unsustainable. And in that fourth sub-bullet there, talking about the ACA goals, which is what we've been talking about here and the last few meetings, and finally the really what is the ask, and that is a 10-year plan. If I could make a suggestion, Ann, to start the commentary and dialogue, is I'd like to strike the 10-year. Just put long-term. Initially, I was 10-year myself, but I just think long-term is a better thing to say as opposed to a definitive time period.
Fine.
Yeah.
So, actually, that's a good idea.
So other than that, my only other thought, and this everyone sent in thoughts, which were all great, was keeping it like this and not getting into specific. This would not be something that NYSAC would say. We would be very specific as to how the state should do it. But I think that that's sort of out of our grade here, that's the job of the budget division and the health department and the governor's office and the legislature. But by sending this type of a message, I think it's constructive and moves the ball forward. So that's really all I have to say. And I think everyone did a good job in giving it a lot of thought and trying to be reasonable, and it's unreasonable to say the state should assume an $8 billion program in the 12 budget, which I would be advocating for.
probably won't.
No, I will not. That is. Although Martha will be asking me. No, I'm only kidding. It's just unreasonable. So.
Ask for things right.
So, with that said, Ann, I'll turn it back to you.
Well, I think he's proposed a change in the recommendation, and I'd like us to focus on that if we have agreement on everything else. So unless somebody has a problem with any of the wording on the top, I'd like to go to the right to the bottom and again, look at the recommendation. If we take 10 years out, then it is rather vague. And Linda? Oh.
He had just come up with a friendly amendment.
Oh, what is it?
He had, which I think fits in nicely with what you say. We just take tenure out and say we recommend the state develop a plan for more sustainable Medicaid that phases out reliance on property taxes and includes examination of financing structures in other states.
That phases out reliance on property.
Right now it says explores alternatives,
which is very vague.
We don't want to rely on property taxes anymore.
Right.
I think we have consensus on that point. So I think if the idea that you would phase out the reliance on property taxes.
And then develop a plan, so just not say long term. We know what the state thinks of as long term, the whole 50 years. So.
All right.
I like that.
Develop a plan.
Develop a plan to phase it out.
Good. Yeah, sure. Anything is good.
Well, let me just hear. Is there anyone who wants to keep a more specific time frame in there?
I'm going to.
Oh, please.
Ah,
good.
Yes.
You can develop a lot of plans.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great suggestion.
Yep.
All right. So we've taken tenure out. Nobody's objected. Said develop and implement a plan for more sustainable Medicaid financing that phases out reliance on property taxes and includes the examination of financing structures in other states. Got it?
Good. Yeah.
Oh, this group works well. Okay. It's great.
Right, everything above it.
Now, as I said, we're at the long-term care committee.
Sure, we're back on time.
And we're back on time. Joe wasn't able to be here. I had asked him to chair it because I just wasn't going to do that, and he agreed and worked a lot with the committee. I think several of you in the room participated in that. And Trilby, I think you're going to give us an update on where that group stands.
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. Just to let folks know who's on it from this group, Joe's chairing, and I think we all at our first meeting said, Joe, please keep chairing. Do that. Denise Figueroa, David Jolly, Lauren Ranaletta, who's not with us today, Fran Turner, and Ann, I think you're also a member, are you?
Sure.
Sure? Great. So we have very robust representation from this group, and everybody attended the first meeting, and we were joined by, from the Managed Long-Term Care Work Group, five members, Michael Birnbaum, Doug Guggen-Callahan. Well, I should say who these folks are with. Michael Birnbaum is from the United Hospital Fund. Doug Guggen-Callahan is with the Medicare Rights Center. Rona Shapiro, 1199, Mary Harper from the New York City Human Resources Administration, and Tom Holt from Lutheran Social Services in Jamestown. So, you know, these folks were officially appointed by the Managed Long-Term Care Group, and we had a very good first meeting. A lot of discussion and a lot of questions really arose from the group, because I would say that what we focused on really was a desire to... Let me try to track the slides. We identified a charge for ourselves, which we got agreement on pretty early on, that what we're really wanting to do is speed eligibility and enrollment. And we want to focus on proposals in the short and midterm. Of course, we couldn't hold off on also thinking we're going to have something to say about where we should get long term. Next slide, please. Sure. We came up with three major buckets that we thought, after having done a survey of the group, we thought all of our priority issues fit into these three main buckets. One was streamlining and standardizing eligibility and enrollment. The next was identifying causes for delay. We were all very concerned about how long it takes to process a long-term care application. And the other major thing was this realization of how complicated the world is for these kinds of consumers, and how we really need to be educating them about what their options are going to be, and that the workers and the providers also need to be aware, especially with everything changing in the world of managed care around delivery of these services. So our first discussion really led us to a lot of questions. We knew there were certain things afoot that we needed to learn more about, because we had this strong desire to automize as much as possible, very consistent with what this group is doing, and standardize as much as possible. So we knew that there was an asset verification system being developed, and Joe brought a question back to the State Department of Health to tell us more about that. we had a notion that, you know, not all of these long-term care applications are created equal. Some of them are actually not as complicated as others. And so we were very attracted to the idea that maybe you could have a truncated eligibility process for some of the apps. Not all of them need to be handled as manually as they are now. So we wanted to explore whether that might be possible. The last two bullet points, on spend down, we didn't spend as much time discussing that, but we've gotten a lot of input from other stakeholders. Valerie Bogard, who works down in New York City, had pulled a lot of consumer stakeholders together, and they developed some proposals, and Manat had done a paper on spend down. So we took a lot of that information to DOH and asked them to take a look at that and let us know what they thought was viable. And then finally, we asked for some clarification about a couple of issues that were really disturbing from a county perspective, and those are the spousal refusal and the look-back periods. We had a notion that these things are required by federal law, but we wanted to get some clarification on that. So these were all questions that Joel brought back to the State Department of Health. I think he has gotten an email back on that, which is just now being distributed to our subgroup, so I don't think it would be appropriate for me to report on that yet. We imagine that we're going to have at least two more meetings, and what we'd like to do is come back to you all with some recommendations that we hope could then be included in the final recommendations out of this group. This is not me. All right, just a couple.
That's
me.
Okay. There we go.
That's our closing slide.
Okay. All right, yeah, and so just to throw out a couple of other things that I don't see on the slide that we did spend some time on that might emerge from our group. One was this notion that Judy touched on earlier that it might benefit the districts to have a centralized legal review process, that what is very difficult for districts is often to deal with these sophisticated financial arrangements put together by private attorneys, and, you know, they all have to go through this, so maybe these could be handled in one place and ease the burden there. Again, and that's the notion that those are one set of applications. Others are easier to deal with. And then the other thing was the point of access idea for consumers and whether this might be an important concept to sort of revive as a way to make sure that people coming into the system learn about all the different options, managed long-term care, waiver programs, mainstream managed care with now the personal care carved in. And so we wanted to learn more about what DOH thinks about where that should sit and whether that might be more appropriate for the managed long-term care group or something that this subcommittee should think about. But we really wanted to consider some kind of mechanism for consumer education. And I think that about sums it up. Did anybody have any questions about, or other members have anything to add?
No, I think you hit all the high points there. The discussion on presumptive eligibility was an interesting.
Yes, and I think one thing that we were aware of in our discussion that will be something to focus on going forward is we love this idea of, you know, a presumptive eligibility, a truncated process, but we don't want to create any more complexity than we have now. So we have to be careful with any kind of triage system that we don't inadvertently do that. But, yeah, that is sort of what we were drawn to.
I think the ideas around asset verifications are important. I can tell you. When you look at the SUNY report, I look at my nursing home division directly, those applications are late, not necessarily based on volume, based upon the date they arrive, that notices go out to the banks. That information comes back 30, 45 days, 90 days later, and the application is just sitting there, and it's in pen status, and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting. The other really important part here is it's time for DOH to be a lot more clear about what the rules are around, you know, sometimes you'll call and ask a question and they'll say, well, that's based on local discretion or something. We have to move away from it. And I know that I actually asked a question directly about spend down and the answer I got, well, you can, but maybe you shouldn't. And it's really your decision. And that's, so when we talk about variation, not that the variation doesn't happen in the county, because there's certainly variation there, but a lot of this comes back to the fact that these rules are not clear. Can you apply the payment for an oxygen tank on a spend down? Go back and forth, you know. But then, of course, the consumer, if they get the answer, they can. If that answer changes 10 days later, they'll keep sending you that bill, and you keep denying the spend down. It's a big circle. So we need, when we talk about long-term care, a lot more clarity from the state in regards to what's acceptable and what's not.
Yeah. Right. And that's all driven by this desire to get things more consistent, get them more standardized.
Right.
Yeah.
Why would you want those kinds of – why would DOH even want local discretion on that?
You know what?
Why would you – what?
Wouldn't. Let me say, it's not their fault. The regulations can't answer every question.
Yeah, that's what
every question comes to you. So the, so then you try to answer the question by applying some version of the regulation to it, and that's where the debate begins. Well, the regulation says this, but no one really said it's oxygen tanks or it's hydrogen fuel in a car. You know, all these things, consumers bring them all to you.
Yeah.
Right, and this area highlights that. The reason Medicaid is so hard to administer is because it's so complicated and because there are so many little factual twists on these regulations, which I think is something for us to consider at the next meeting when we talk about how can we get a mechanism in there that will support the districts and also ensure more consistency and standardization.
So in the future, if we're successful, there should be less county discretion, right?
You would hope there'd be less county discretion, and I would also advise that those regulations should be specific but broad. So, for example, if certain things are eligible for spend down, and that should be that. And then consumers shouldn't be allowed to come in and try to apply this or try to apply that, because that's where the questions come in. And not every regulation can answer every question. Mm-hmm. But what you need is a yes or no, you know? Mm-hmm. Here's the category in which you can get spend down for. All these other things are out.
And that's what you get with centralization.
Right.
That's what's so appealing about centralization. And, you know, with some of those special pop questions, that may be why you got so many yeses on centralization.
Not entirely. I mean, some of the gray areas he's talking about where we don't even know the answers, like where we know the answers, I think, central, but we don't know the answers and we've got to talk among ourselves. Sometimes if that dialogue doesn't happen and it doesn't happen in the right way, a staff person can make the decision. It could be different from the next staff person.
Right.
That's going to happen in centralization if there aren't clear rules or you haven't ever had the question before.
But at least it's the same staff people having those conversations as opposed to all the different district office staff having those conversations.
Well, and then theoretically the next county that asks the question is more likely to get the same answer.
Right.
Yeah.
And hopefully the answer gets written down.
Yes.
So when those folks aren't there anymore to have the conversation.
And those are, when you talk about documents that come out from the state, the Q&As are generally the most helpful because those Q&As will be collected. The Q&As on transportation, for example, are very helpful. But we've found already with transportation, where there is the region, that a lot of this has gone away very quickly because now you have seven counties, one provider. All the questions are going to the state to get answered and then applied to all seven counties. So we definitely need simplification. In this area, we need simplification and consistent regulations if we want to address the issue of timeliness because all these things are getting in the way of timeliness.
Mm-hmm. Are there other comments about this? One from me. The spousal refusal elimination was one of the 81 Medicaid redesign team recommendations that got nixed by the legislature.
Right.
So I think the question is, what was it about it that got it nixed? And is it that people were afraid that families would lose their homes, or was it something other than that? Because I don't know that we'll make much progress with it if we don't better understand why it was turned down.
What were the politics there? And the other piece is that in the institutional setting, we can't eliminate it.
Right.
So it was proposed that it be eliminated in the community setting, but federal law requires that it be allowed in the institutional setting.
Spousal refusal?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ruby, do you want to speak to why it didn't happen, why the legislature rejected it?
You know, I'm not sure that I have such a clear sense of the politics. It seems to me that we were at risk there. I don't know that I really understand completely what drove that.
It is on spousal refusal reform.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the State Bar Association and not trial lawyers, but elder law lawyers, State Assembly, and it's been one of those long-standing principles here that have blocked this.
We had a little, you know, I was involved in some negotiations on it with the Assembly and the Senate where there was a glimmer of hope. So I think what you're saying in the end is right, but the issues that I remembered were yeah, it makes sense not to have spousal refusal in the community setting, but for low-income people in the community.
That was,
can you do something for low-income people in the community? And the Assembly proposed something as a compromise, and I forget the details of it. I could look it up. And we were okay with it as an administration, and I thought, my God, we're really going to get there. And then it was, like, shut down, off the table. And so there definitely is a consumer interest around the proposal that the MRT adopted may have. It was closing it down, but that may have left people vulnerable. And the Assembly was comfortable, more comfortable, if you didn't leave the vulnerability.
That's
and we
right.
were concerned about opening up to too many costs. So there was something crafted that was kind of in between. So I raise it just if we think we're going to offer that up again, we should. What you're saying,
Understand.
We shouldn't offer a loser up again. We should offer
okay.
something up that we
or
maybe can promote something more reasonable.
Yeah, I think it would be important to build in that safeguard for the low income. I do remember being involved in
right.
conversations, and that was.
And the reason I called on you is because you and I talked about that
yes.
in the legislature.
Sorry, thank you.
That's okay.
yes. That was a compromise that was floated, and Dick Gottfried was supportive of that. But then in the end, they didn't move at all.
Mm-hmm.
They just kept the law as is.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments for the committee? Or thank you very much. Share our thanks with. Well, certainly the folks in this room, but those who aren't here and the
Joe
folks from the other committee, Joe, for doing this. And we'll look for...
Are we going to take the recommendations into our recommendations? Or
yes. I think the way we see this is that at our last meeting, the 27th, their recommendations would come to us and they would be incorporated as part of our
And I guess we haven't gotten into who, but I agree with you. And then if they want to include them too, they can
yeah.
do that.
And they'd be extra powerful.
Extra powerful.
Yeah. Double.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for this.
Before we move on, could we just go back to financing recommendations?
Sure.
Steve raised an issue with you, which I think we need to examine a little bit more before we actually vote on this recommendation.
Great.
There is one county, Monroe, that does not pay for Medicaid for its property taxes. And I think the spirit of this is to ultimately move financing of Medicaid away from local government, whatever that might
yeah.
be. So we might have to acknowledge in there that it's not just property tax, but there's also a case of sales tax, and it's just local resources. But I want to make sure that we wouldn't be covered in this anyway.
Well, would you say something that might say alternatives to relying on local resources, parentheses, property tax, sales tax, et cetera,
that
might cover it?
Because, you know, I think if after this, if we submit this and somebody says, well, all right, you know, counties, we get it.
Let's do it all with sales tax.
Let's do it all with sales tax.
We have accomplished nothing.
I actually put her on the spot.
All right, thank you. That would be
in the first bullet, too.
Say local tax revenue is probably the way to
yeah.
look
yeah.
Judy, I also sent you a comment saying that 30%, because you just double-checked that.
I did double-check, and actually Martha had made the edit before I got your comment. You all did. I mean, it was an
okay.
amazing amount of feedback. It's
well,
not
near
it,
and dear to us, Judy.
It's the non-federal cost. So you what you were identifying
got it. Thank
the
you.
Cost.
Okay.
States at 15, counties at, you know, 7-point-something, and so it's about – so it, in total, it's 30% of the.
So it's 30% of the half of the.
Non-federal, 30
right.
of 50.
I didn't make that up. I think I got it from you.
And then I actually went and did the math and said, no,
okay.
right.
Okay, good. That addresses it for you? Oh, good. Well, I'm glad we caught it then. All right. Well, the next piece then is to kind of summarize where we are. And in addition to that, I'd also like to get your input on ideas you might have about how to structure that conversation next time about local versus state, and ways that we might make that a very productive, or the definition of local, very productive conversation, any work we could do in advance. So, but why don't we wrap this up, and then we'll go to that, and make sure we have the agenda right for the next
mm-hmm.
meeting, and we can go swimming. Right.
There's a
throughway.
This last one was an attempt on my part to say where are we and where do we think we're going to end up with recommendations. So I put our first recommendation from our very first meeting up there. You know, you should feel free to edit it if you choose to. We have a financing one. I didn't know it would be this one, so I didn't write it there. But that's what we'll come in sort of next time with the guiding principles we agreed to, the model. I mean, all these things sort of leading to a package of recommendations.
And I think this will be our collection of recommendations. Right. And the model then would include some recommendation
yeah.
of around what local, what we mean by local.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that we have so that's where that would fall. Okay.
Good.
Is there anything missing off of here or things that you thought you were going to do about?
It's on my mind for about an hour now, so I might as well say it. And that's that as long as that picture is in two separate slides, I don't know that you get where you want to get. So if you can get it visually to be together.
Yeah, I was trying to do that.
It's just unacceptable, Judy.
He found the thing that was...
Can we,
it bothered Ann, too.
Can I ask a question? Ann, on the first bullet, you know, we're approaching October. I expect the Senate to come back and pass legislation. But what happens, again, in that first bullet, should the state...
The federal government runs our exchange.
Okay. Is that... permanently or until such time as the state acts? Is there a calendar year threshold here?
The state
is there any
can,
rush?
There is, well, there's two. Let me answer the question and then you determine if there's a rush. There's the state certified that the federal government believes that we'll be operationally ready on January 1st, 2014. They need to certify us January 1st, 2013. So we don't have to be ready, but they have to see everything that we are, in fact, we will be operationally ready. If they don't think we will, they can say you're not going to be ready, and they will run our exchange. And then the state has a period where they can, a year from when they'll be operationally ready, so it could be 2016, 2015, say, okay, come in 2015 and make us ready for 2016. That can happen, but... we have until next June to get federal money to stand up the exchange. And if we don't have statute, we can't get that federal money. And we may not. I mean, I think the fact that they haven't come back and done it is a real problem from my personal perspective.
Right.
So the feds set it up where they'll run it and then you can take over, but you won't get federal money to do it. And I don't know how... We'd have all the money now if they passed this law. We could have gone in for a level two establishment money, which is the big money, if they passed the law when they should have this last session. But they didn't. We thought they would have come back and done it by now. We can't do it until we get that law. We have gotten, the Senate actually asked us, we don't believe you. So we got CMS to say, now here's the issue. I mean, the governor could tomorrow say, the health department will be the exchange. Nobody thinks that's ideal, but he could do that, and he could, you know, without statute.
Really? He could do an executive order?
I think so. Don't you think he could say?
That's the state law, and the feds will defer to whatever.
Right. I mean, we decided that the exchange, the Senate, the Assembly, and the Executive decided the exchange should be a public benefit corporation. For all kinds of flexibility that a public benefit corporation gives you in hiring and procurement and in order to have a public benefit corporation, we need state statute. So that's what we said to CMS. If our law requires us to have a law to have what we want, do we need statute before we can get level two? And the answer was yes. The Senate, I felt very strongly that it not be a state agency. So I do think the governor could say, okay, you're the exchange now. But I think we'd have a hard time at the health department with no staff being operationally ready by 2013. I mean, that's the concern that I have.
They don't usually pass anything until June. So if they don't come back until January,
right,
then we're looking at June again.
I think that if they've passed it in June, we maybe could get the money, but we wouldn't be ready by 2014.
Okay.
I think there's just no way to be ready by 2014.
So we need to get back before June.
I think so.
So what are the odds? I mean, are they going to have contracts to approve?
Probably. They have to come back to do the PEP contract if PEP ratifies.
Maybe our resolution.
And they have to come back as soon as possible to do that because part of the contract is these furlough days, which have to happen before the end of the fiscal year. So they need as much time as possible,
yeah,
first of all, to deduct from their paychecks. Secondly, to make sure people get the 5 days.
So you said when, as soon as they ratify?
I think the ratification vote is September 27th.
Yeah, the ballots went out, didn't they?
Probably, yeah. Because the ballots are usually out 2-3 weeks, so.
The mail order.
Yes. And I think they're counted on the 27th.
Well, I think, yeah. So were you going to say maybe our resolution ought to what?
Well, this might be, I might be pushing the boundaries. But I was going to say maybe our resolution should say that we pass a statute, and if not, the governor should issue an executive order to create an exchange. That the important thing is that New York have its own exchange.
Yeah. Because what we're saying is we do not want a federal exchange.
We don't want a federal exchange.
But now,
and we want some money to
set up.
And if DOH ends up starting an office, it may be later. I mean, of course, or once it's DOH,
they could later.
I mean, we are starting it now. I mean,
right.
We and insurance are working very closely on implementing all the pieces that we can without an exchange board. But it's starting to get weird. It's like there's going to be a board that's going to make these decisions, and we're all kind of making them.
Well, I agree completely.
They are.
That's not out. We got to say these things. We don't, you know, they're not going to read between the lines.
Yeah.
We have to actually say what we mean.
So basically, keep our resolution that there should be legislation, lacking legislation, the governor should issue an executive order authorizing an existing agency to establish an exchange.
I think we could premise that by saying we don't think it's in the best interest of the people of the state, the providers, any of the folks involved to have a federal exchange. And since that will happen if we take no action, here's our preference and here's our fallback. I think that could be a hefty resolution. So are people in agreement we should kind of phrase it that way?
Yes.
Thank you, Melinda, for that.
I might like put it at that. I mean, should an act legislation.
Oh, wait, the resolution is longer. I think this is just.
Yeah, I mean, I will take these pieces, work it out, send it around so you can do
right.
The same thing you did on the financing so we can have efficiency right. When we're here.
What are you talking about trying to push it?
But
it worked nicely, I thought.
Yeah, as soon as possible, I mean, like in fall of 2011.
I think fall of 2011 is exactly right.
Yeah. He's right.
But that indicates not wait till the January 7th.
Not wait till the new
January. Right. And they have to come back.
Okay. Great. Well, we've got it. I guess we're having another meeting, right? And in that meeting, one of the big things we want to spend time on is talking about local and what it looks like. Do people have any suggestions about how we might do that in the most effective way in the group? Is there free work that we could do? Is there some alternatives we could present for discussion and springboard? Any thoughts on that? Yes, Melissa.
I just thought, listening to us all talk today, that there actually is some consensus emerging there. And I don't know, Judy, whether you felt like there was, but I wondered if there was enough to put a straw model up for us. Because I think on that one slide, we came to the agreement that there are some functions that are fundamentally local district functions.
Not just local, but local
district functions.
Right.
And then there are a set of other functions that there are a group of the what we call the third-party assisters who could play that role, including local districts. And frankly, not every local district may make the same decision on that. So it seemed to me like the structure we were talking about was saying, look, these are local district rules, at least for now, and there might be some phasing out of some of those categories over time. But these, at this point, are essentially local district rules. Here's how those district rules relate to these other pieces. And then these are the third-party assister roles, and here are the menu of folks who could play the role of third-party assisters, and that includes local districts, and that doesn't have to be uniform across the local districts. Local districts may choose to participate or not. They did. You know, we may have kind of bidding for some of those functions, and they may be participating or not across that. So I guess I was wondering, did you felt like you had enough based on the conversation to put a straw model?
I think those two, yes. I think the place where we need discussion is around the role for what does local mean for MAGI? Does it just mean an assistance role and the rest centralized? Or and then what does it mean for the local district? Because I think we didn't – that's where I don't think we've got consensus.
Right.
Can I ask a process question? I'm good. At this next meeting, the goal will be to vote on –
the package of recommendations.
Something together, everybody's going to take it home and look at it and come back. So I guess Mike?
I think if there are, well,
I was
going to
say, you know, withdraw the fund, but if we're going to, it would be nice to circulate. We have a lot
early.
Of experts.
Okay.
Coming
right.
To
okay.
The commissioner. You know, Dave is certainly a wealth of information. It would be nice to really get it into the hands of some of the people that are providing
okay.
Services.
Okay.
That's
okay.
I would advise you that.
So that when we come on the 27th, we've got that feedback
mm-hmm.
in hand.
So a straw worked for people the last time. Is that something that we can use to start with and get it out in advance?
I'd especially like to get feedback on the MAGI population, if they're in the DSS office, they're not Medicaid eligible. That's the big issue. That's going to be the big issue for counties, is what then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they have to do the other subsidized enrollment up to 400%? And if that's something we're going to be talking about, is that in conjunction with the current Medicaid financing that's available? And that's where we'll have some discussion points.
Do you think you can get some clarity on that, Judy?
I can.
And I
just need to go to the part of the regs on it.
Yeah.
And, Maggie, you're saying send this out ahead of time so we can take it to...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need commissioner feedback
mm-hmm.
and people
right.
that are actually doing this.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is what we talked about before, the cross-pollination of social service,
yes.
social services and Medicaid services.
Right. I think that that's an area where we didn't really yet have consensus or haven't
right.
really fleshed it out.
Right.
Similar to the MAGI. And then the third area I would identify that we haven't really settled on or fleshed out is how do we provide the support and the monitoring to improve on consistent standardization? And, you know, Steve mentioned again, maybe there is a regional role here. If not regional, you know, what is that mechanism?
Can I get back to Maggie's point, though, before we get to yours?
Sure.
Because I'm trying to think... And the idea that we're going to get together and have enough information to vote and be done. The other social services is incredibly complex, and we have to talk about it. But I wonder if it would help to send something out in advance that kind of does my best attempt to list them. I'm sure I'll miss some, but that'll be your job to tell me which ones I've missed. And then to say, how does the ACA treat them? So we don't have to cover all that ground in the meeting. For example, you know, PA and Medicaid with PA is traditional Medicaid pathway. Foster children are traditional Medicaid pathway. And just knowing that.
Mentioned specifically in the federal guidelines.
Excuse me?
Food stamps.
Food stamps is, right. Food stamps, we need to have interoperability at some point in
no.
the future. I don't think we'll have that in the
no.
early days. So.
That'd be great.
So just kind of listing out what I think I know, and then having – so at least we're all grounded, so we don't have to ground ourselves in the next meeting. And then you can let me know what programs I forgot about that you do there, and then we'll try to think about how to make that work. I mean, one of the big questions, I don't want to have it now, is should we sever PA and Medicaid and just do separate determinations? It's our option as a state to do that. We haven't, but we kind of have. And so being in a split world has created problems. Is this – should we just do that, PA, and then the app goes for Medicaid determination separately and they go on their separate paths? Pros and cons, but worthy of discussion. We've been discussing it internally. So I certainly love thoughts on that. I'll throw that question out there. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's obvious to me that we're not going to get everything done and decided. And I think voting on something that we're not sure about
absolutely.
Would be a mistake.
Yeah.
But I think we should come with it. And get it out in advance. Have you, and if you have feedback on it, if you can get it back to
mm-hmm.
Judy before the meeting, we can make sure that's all taken into account. I think then, you know, if we can get consensus on some of those roles, then that goes into the report. And then the others would be, these are ones that are left undecided. And I don't know what the plan is, if this group is intended to stay on to finish the work or what the intent is, because I also don't want to leave a lot of loose ends with no clarity about how they're going to get
mm-hmm.
sewn together. So that's another thing. But so we'll get it out to you. You get it back, and then we'll go from there. That work? Yeah, Bob? Oh. Bob?
Different side.
I was going to change.
Yeah. Okay. We haven't really talked about mental health at all. Is there anything unique about mental health clients and services that are under Medicaid that need attention? Okay.
Well, there's a big effort underway now to build these health homes, which will be combining medical and mental health services in the communities for Medicaid enrollees. How that plays out with enrollment and eligibility, I don't think it comes from the back end, but I don't know for sure. Maybe we can get some clarity on that, although it's very unclear at this point how they're going to work.
They're calling it a case management model that the agency. No one else is standing in front of the line. The Aging Institute is sort of kind of the lead, only because they've been so good at this whole case management.
Uh-huh. It's really up in the air. Bob?
So two comments on that. One, I think it is after eligibility is determined, then there's a designation based upon, you know, the chronic diseases and how they combine, and some of them are mental health and substance abuse based. Two, I think there's a real issue about reaching people who are mentally ill about eligibility. Mm-hmm. So I think what would be helpful if we're talking about local is to summarize, and I don't know, you might have some of these documents already, but what the navigators are supposed to be, what the community assistance program is, and a little bit of overview of the facilitated enrollment programs, both community and plan-based. I think, you know, if you're thinking about what the picture looks like from a local perspective, I think having some of that background would be helpful.
Well, especially if we're going to put the ball in that one box up on the right, what's been taken care of by designating this?
Truly, could I impose upon you to create such a one-pager?
Sure.
Because I think we don't have a lot of time for the next meeting. I can't add anymore.
Yeah, maybe I can get more.
And you're the perfect
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be great. A grid would be great.
Very nice. That's great. Okay.
I think it would end up being widely used, too.
Yeah. On this.
Okay. Anything else?
But I cut Trilby off to answer, to go back to social services on your...
I was just tacking on a third area. Yes, the consistency standard and the support role that goes along with that, which the long-term care area really highlights for us as a need that I hope our recommendation can address some way to improve upon the current system, where the districts are really struggling, I think, applying the rules, administering the program in a way that's consistent and standard. And, you know, I had liked the regional straw man. The aspect of it that I liked was here's an opportunity to bring a lot of counties together and make sure they're all on the same page at their regional hub with how to apply the rules, you know, and give them the training and the support they might need. And I liked the idea of the counties doing a competitive bid to the state because, to me, that strengthened the role between the two and the accountability function.
Do you mean one county would apply to be a regional hub? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, well, when we talked about it as the straw model
thing,
person, whatever, it was the notion was that the counties might band together, right, and one of them would actually apply to be that regional hub. And then what I imagined was at that regional hub, the counties would come together periodically and confer that best practices would emerge, that the state would supply, you know, training through those hubs, and that in that way we could improve upon consistency. But I know it wasn't appealing necessarily to all the counties to come together in that way. So I think we took it off the table primarily for that reason. But so I'm searching for some other mechanism, you know, some other way that our recommendations might address the problem of consistency.
And the one area we have to consider is until we address the financing of it, this issue is going to come up over and over again because, like it or not, counties are payers in the system as it stands today. So getting them to agree to a regional system, my executive is going to say, but I pay $73 million for it, and I don't want A, B, or C to tell me, you know, and then until we get to the financing end of it, we're going to struggle there.
Yeah.
Because I think there's too much money at stake here for
maybe that could be part of the plan.
Yeah, but if we got across that, we can cross that hurdle and make it not important any longer for counties to finance.
Right.
Then we can move on to a whole other plane of discussion.
Right. So we can make that our longer-term recommendation. But is there anything we can do in the short term? I guess that's...
I wondered if you wanted to think about a regional model, I was wondering what the regional health department offices could be the location for this service. That's an exchange-supported support, but it's located in the health department's regional offices. I don't know whether that works or not. I don't just go there very often. I don't know what they do, but so I don't know.
I don't want to advance the discussion too much if we're going to talk about it at the next meeting, but I think our historical experience with region is that the regional entity becomes just another layer of oversight
versus
an actual value-added entity.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're all struggling.
Yeah.
Are we creating more bureaucracy, which creates more cost, or are we actually figuring something
different?
Melinda?
I was just going to add that just my impression from doing the report that we did with the United Hospital Fund, where we were interviewing counties about the role of local government in the administration of Medicaid program, is on this issue that Trilby's speaking to, there were two issues. One is there was no enforcement mechanism. There were no teeth. The state would say things and say you're not in compliance or you're not following whatever rule, but there was no follow up. There was no mechanism, or there was no mechanism for at some point bringing things to a head, or there was very very few mechanisms for that. Almost never happened. And the other, equally important, and in some ways I actually think more important, was that there were very limited resources at the state to play that important.
Right.
And in fact, we heard a lot from counties, and we were hearing this today too, about wanting more technical support and more resources and feeling like they didn't, from the counties, and feeling like they weren't getting it from the state. So maybe one of the things that we can recommend as a group is that highlight the importance of this function and talk about the recommend, again, this is requires resources, but that there needs to be more resources as the system's becoming more complex, and that you know, whether that sits in the exchange or that sits within the department, but we need to build out some administrative infrastructure for that, because it doesn't exist in a meaningful way right now.
Yeah.
And the other thing I found interesting with what Commissioner Jolly was saying was, if you looked at our staffing, the least staff we have is in the long-term care SSI-related eligibility, and we have way more in community Medicaid. So the most complex people have the least staff who help, having to talk to all the districts. You're absolutely right. It's woefully understaffed, and I think that's part of the problem you get with different answers and different not knowing the answers.
Right, and as the rest of our recommendations are really leaving the districts with these complicated apps and vulnerable populations, I think this idea of building some resources out, shifting some resources, I hate to just say build, because
I'm wondering if our automation recommendations around the MAGI group really bring us consistency. If it's not the long-term care subcommittee, because they're really the non-MAGI population, I know it's not all long-term care, but it's non-MAGI, if that's a place to embed one of those recommendations.
Yeah.
Since you're on it, you could work on it. You know what I mean?
And yeah, we talk about shifting resources. I think with automation, we are assuming that
there will be
efficiencies there, and those efficiencies need to be reinvested in supporting the aspects that are resistant or last to be automated because of their complexity right now.
As opposed to seeing that as
personnel even further. Right. So we stay away from how those resources, what sort of framework they should be put into, but just say they need to be reinvested. That might be the most we can do.
Right.
Not to cut the meeting short, but the Thruway anticipates being closed. Now, I don't know if that means the decision maker here.
They're considering it right now. While they're considering
anticipates being
that's
closed.
That's like the worst of all scenarios. It's like if it's closed, I decide whether to stay in Rochester.
Undeciding.
Or what, while you're in the middle of it. Yes.
All right.
I see. See you on the 20th.
Or closes on us so we don't get home and we're in Herkimer.
That's the way I feel, Maggie. It's like I feel the other way this time.
Good luck, Dave.
Good luck.
Good luck.
The next, the MRT meeting, which was supposed to be the 20th of September, has been moved to early October. So our recommendations will be just timely for that presentation.
They're not. That meeting is not for our recommendations, just so you know.
Oh, well.
So that's what Jason, I don't know, its entirety. But what Jason said in the work groups is they just give a status report.
Okay.
And we can say we're done with recommendations if we want to. But it's the November 1st meeting
okay.
that they actually get them
so
to
we
act
have
on.
A little tweaking time, but I don't want to postpone it. Yes.
Well, I'm actually concerned about the first recommendation on the exchange on the statute. Our next meeting is when?
27th.
Is the date of ratification. Actually, we won't know until later on that day.
And then it'll take a couple days before.
Martha, I can tell you there are people in the governor's office who every single day are trying to get the Senate to come do this bill. So it's not like our recommendation is the only voice out there that.
But would it help to get it sooner?
I don't know. I mean, why put it up on the summary on the website after our first meeting?
Yeah, we asked
someone with kids.
That, right?
Well, I'm thinking there are some
that.
Of us who have the ability to take it and then use it, you know,
yeah.
without asking you to be the only one. You know, some of us.
Let Martha finish her thought here.
Okay.
If we could get language on that and get a statement, you know, whether it's a resolution or a press release, something that's a press release, I think we should issue it proactively, be prepared on the 27th to put it out publicly, not just post it on the website, but to actually stand somewhere and get a couple reporters and announce it, send it to all the counties, NYSAC can ask all the counties to pass resolutions or chairs and execs to at least send a letter, that sort of thing. I think we need to add a public note to this. Our next meeting would be timely, and that would because they would be coming back, or we
right.
add impetus to get them back and to deal with it.
Well, then let's steer towards that. We could. You're not suggesting doing it before our next meeting.
No, right? I think if we have another one of the things, we work out the language ahead.
Right.
Of
time,
yeah.
Have it ready to.
I think we can do that.
And then maybe seriously have invite reporters to the end of our meeting on the 27th. And say, you know, we want to update the press, update the public on what this group's been doing. And the very first order of business we want to recommend that the state deal with is this issue.
Let's work on process for that. I just don't know as a committee of the MRT whether or not it's appropriate for us to be out on our own. I just
mm-hmm.
don't know. So can we come back with recommendations?
Is ask forgiveness instead of permission. Sometimes get in trouble.
And that's why I like to do things, too. But let's
want to do that independently.
That's
of
what I was thinking.
Action of the committee.
I was actually thinking that.
And we don't have to
sure.
ask permission.
Right. It's the language.
So it's a language.
Then we're able to
say
that we agreed on this.
Agreed on
but
this.
We're the one.
Right.
I mean,
there's other organizations too. The Health Plan Association. There's others that could use that language to push for.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point, Mark.
I like the personal approach of just you know individually. We all have representatives, and we could educate them. I think to educate the public, this is a pretty complex thing, and I'm not. You know, I'm not sure you could hold a press conference and get people to understand the urgency of the exchange without going into everything that we've been talking about for a long time. But to go to individual representatives and say, this is critical and this is what will happen if we don't have some state action, it might be better to...
Well, if there's our veteran Liz Benjamin get it, so they can explain it. And that,
well, right.
Yeah.
They're informed, yeah.
Okay. Any other things left undone today? All right. Well, then I'm going to adjourn and thank you all for your time and energy. Every meeting
thank
feels
you.
Like we're making more progress.
I know.
You know
it
feels good.
And
we'll see you the next time to wrap it all up and
right.
be done. 27th.
Fly right over the water.
Whatever it is. Good luck.
Okay, a little bit.
Thank you. How did you get here, Deborah? Through class? Smart woman.
Are you a legislator, there? But so am I.
You want that call?
But let's talk. Let's
oh, dang.
Figure out
who
it
is.
I know. You know,
because they anticipate
our Hispanic children in
24
counties like 75 letters.
I believe it's in the east of the year.
On this. I'm passing.
Right. So you could get at least
and,
our interior.
Good.
Where they shut the thing down.
Yeah. I think
flowers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Stuff staying
in the same.
Okay. Oh, yeah. They're about 2 hours.
You know,
they're not given any time frame?
Yeah, the governor could call them back to session, so you got to be a little bit careful. I mean, he could call an extraordinary session.
Sorry to keep putting you.
Reason not to.
But I knew that was an easy thing after the report.
I think that's it.
I just wish I remembered the whole compromise.
I do think he did. Well, no, not that. The one thing I asked for that. So much easier.
We have, and that chart we already have in the report. We have the FDA.
Well, good.
Are you going right now? I don't know.
Are, but you want to
I mean, that is.
Okay.
There's a party that I have to be at 5:30 in Syracuse. So
first things first.
Yeah.
Take care of
it. You too. Thanks. If we finish at 2, I could probably stay till 3 or 3:30. But I gotta have to talk to you about
to go. Right afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will check with
them. If she could meet with us, meet where we are in Troy.
Yeah.
Come and visit
yeah.
with us. Bye, Melinda. Then we could, you know, have coffee or something.
Yeah.
Meet there.
Yeah. In fact, there's a little coffee place. If we're going to be in the same spot.
Troy, yeah.
A coffee place right down the street.
Yes, there is.
All right. I'll look
at that. All right. That'd be good.
Thank you.
Okay.
Excuse me. I'm Dave. Yes. Hello.
Well, I think we're making progress.
I'm fine with anonymity.
Okay.
Okay, no, it's an interesting exercise. I mean, just getting all the answers.
The economic development. Yeah. Are you?
And in this process, you're like, How are we going to actually do this?
Yeah.
That would be really easy to do.
I wanted to tell you that, you know, we're working with Thompson County to folks in Thompson County. Lisa Holmes is leading the work. And we're trying to get some federal money in here to pay for transition coaches for people who leave the hospital. And there's big money now. And so we're concentrating on rural areas of the region. And Tompkins, under Lisa's direction, is really leading the charge there in central New York. And if we can get some money for these things, that would... Because there's no reimbursement, and, you know, hospitals are desperate to reduce readmission. So this is a way to do that. And so we're working on it. But it's been good to work with your folks.
Oh, yes. Well, and I'm going to be working with
you. Yeah, now are you the county of that? Oh, okay. You don't have an expense. Okay, I thought every county had one.
Oh, no,
not at all. Well, see, I'm fairly new to New York. I didn't grow up here or anything, so I only know a little bit about the other
There's a county executive.
How are you going to get home, though?
I'll check.
Down the three-way. No, it says the three-way is closed to Verona, from Albany to Verona.
where the office.
That's just east, I think, of Syracuse.
Oh, that's fine. Because I get off
Geneva.
So, yeah, I should.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you for your participation here.
I'm glad I can make it. Sorry I was.
Hey. Okay. See you later.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoyed it, did you?
Yeah,
it was good. Oh, no, really? Thank you. Oh.
Meeting tomorrow, and I gotta figure out what to do. I have to make sure that I contact someone today if I'm not gonna show up.
Yeah. In New York tomorrow at 8 o'clock?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Oh, listen, this is great. I gotta make this call, but I will be in touch.
Yeah.
Do
you have a reason? I thank you.
I can't
do. Thank you from our local report who came up to me and said, he's not the normal helper. Well, take care. You know what? And Friday, thanks, Steve, and I kind of initiated that because there's a local county government reporter here who asks me all the time about what's going on with this group.
Mm-hmm.
And so today when I got here, Steve said to
him, Dottie, it's Ann. Just checking in because the word is the thruway is closing. So I want to hope you made it through before then. Give me a call. Bye.
Yeah, you never like that word, anticipate.
The thruway anticipates being closed. And I thought, well, is that the thruway speaking, or who is that?
And I took a nice Amtrak ride up.
You told him you bought a wrong parking, right?
I did.
How are you going to get back?
I'm being arranged to pick up a car.
I should have said, I think.
Oh, good, yeah. Oh. That was?
I said we saved you from a report.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I figured that out. Steve talked. Yeah,
Steve told him
really.
Okay. That's
what he told me after.
Okay.
Well, we'll see the article. No, he was fine. I talked to him. It's just he understands that, you know, we're part of a larger group.
Yeah.
Well, hey, don't worry about that. Yes, it's right up there.
Okay.
See
you later this month. David, will you have to go deep
yeah,
first?
Yeah, I'll probably have to go down to Binghamton. But
yes, you can.
Yeah. They say 81's still open, but
how's your leg, by the way?
It's good. You know, yeah. I don't have to wear the brace now when I walk, so to walk back to get the airplane back, and I can take it off again. So
oh, good.
I'm excited, you know?
Yeah, you should
yeah.
be. Mine is good.
Yeah.
You know, I had acupuncture after my
oh, yeah? Was it helpful?
Oh,
yeah?
I'm a big believer.
Okay.
Not a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Good seeing you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.